Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo
bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. So we are reading Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 3, Text 34. Yadu eso parata devi, Maya visharadi mati. Sampanna eveti vidur, Mahimni sve mahiyate, Yadi eso parata devi, Maya vaisharadi mati. Sampanna eveti vidur, Mahimni sva mahiyate, Yadi eso parata devi, Maya vaisharati mati, Sampanna eveti vidur. Mahimni sve mahiyate.
Mahimni sve mahiyate.
Yadi,
if however,
Esham
Dei
Uparatam
subsided
Devi Mayam
illusory energy
Vaisharadi
full of knowledge
Mati
enlightenment
Sampanam
enriched with
Evam
certainly
Idi
thus
Vidu
being cognizant
Mahimni
in the glories
Sven
of the self
Mahiyate
being situated in
Translation and purport by Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.
If the illusory energy subsides and the living entity becomes fully enriched with knowledge by the grace of the Lord, then he becomes at once enlightened with self-realization and thus becomes situated in his own glory.
Purport.
Because the Lord is absolute transcendence, all of his forms, names, pastimes, attributes, associates, and energies are identical with him. His transcendental energy acts according to his omnipotency. The same energy acts as his external, internal, and marginal energies. And by his omnipotency, he can perform anything and everything through the agency of any of the above energies. He can turn the external energy into internal by his will. Therefore, by his grace, the external energy which is employed in illusioning those living beings who want to have it subsides by the will of the Lord in terms of repentance and penance for the conditioned souls. And the very same energy then acts to help the purified living being make progress on the path of self-realization. The example of electrical energy is very appropriate in this connection. The expert electrician can utilize the electrical energy for both heating and cooling by adjustment only. Similarly, the external energy which now bewilders the living being into continuation of birth and death is turned into internal potency by the will of the Lord to lead the living being to eternal life. When a living being is thus graced by the Lord, he is placed in his proper constitutional position to enjoy eternal spiritual life.
Yadi esha paratandi vi mai vaisha radhi matim sampana evati vidur mahimni sve mahiyate.
If the illusory energy subsides and the living entity becomes fully enriched with knowledge by the grace of the Lord, then he becomes at once enlightened with self-realization and thus becomes situated in his own glory.
Om Jnana Timirandasya Janandana Shalakaya Chakshun Mulitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Vancha Kalpatru Vyacha Kripa Sinubhyaya Vacha Patitanam Bhavane Vyo Vaishnave Vyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare.
So how is everyone doing? Good. I know it's a little bit cold, but we are yogis, so we can tolerate. So today we have a beautiful verse. And it is continuation in this chapter where Sutta Goswami initially spoke about different incarnations of the Lord. And now in this particular verse, it's described that if by good fortune the illusory energy subsides and the living entity becomes fully enriched with knowledge by the grace of the Lord, then he becomes at once enlightened with self-realization and become situated in his own glory. So, we know everybody in this world wants to become enriched with the wealth, with money, gold, different kinds of opulence. But in this particular case, the type of the enrichment that we are speaking about, it's different. And it has the spiritual quality. And what is it that the Lord is speaking here? It's a knowledge. And a very interesting thing to consider, that it's indicated in this particular verse that knowledge is possible only when the illusory energy subsides. In other words, when the free moods of nature basically give a break to living entity, then the conditioned soul can actually try to cultivate spiritual knowledge. So when we speak about knowledge, as we know, there is all kind of varieties and definitions what the knowledge is. Could anybody guess what, you know, how would you define knowledge in your own words? Like, if somebody would ask you, what is the knowledge? What would you say? Don't be shy. Any volunteers? Anyhow, I looked a little bit myself. I looked in different dictionaries, Oxford Dictionary, Webster Dictionary, and they all have a different kind of explanation of what knowledge is. So I'll kind of share with you a couple of different here, what they're saying. The fact or condition of knowing something with familiarity gained through experience or association. That's one definition. Then the second definition, acquaintance with facts, truths, or principles as from study or investigation. And then the third one, I have information, understanding, and skills that you gain through education and experience. So you can see, like, you know, there's different ways to perceive what knowledge is. But in simple words, you know, if you are trying to teach someone, basically you would tell person, look, there's a door, you know, it has a handle. If you want to pass through, you should open the door and walk through. So that alone, it's, you know, even though it's very simple, it is knowledge. You're basically giving me knowledge, because I may have bad eyes and I don't see there's a glass. So if I walk through, I will bump my head. So, but only you telling me that, it's just a theoretical knowledge. And now if I walk through that door and I didn't open the door and I bump my head, then I will have actually a realization, oh, it actually hurts. So I should have listened to you. So now I actually have a realized knowledge. So jnana, vijnana. I have a realization. But just imagine, you know, I'm a very foolish person and I start to think, why should I listen to you? Why should I listen to you? I can just run through this door, no problem, you know. What you're saying, you know, maybe or may or may not be true. And, you know, then I will have to pay the consequence. You know, I'll probably have, you know, my face all in the blood. So we can see like that in a simple way, basically the knowledge is present all around us. You know, there's different rules for pretty much for everything you do. Even if you're driving on a street, you know, there's a red light, you have to stop. If you don't, eventually you will get in trouble. So now it becomes quite interesting when we speak about spiritual topics that people start to actually doubt, and they start saying like, oh, I have not seen God. You know, what you say, maybe mythology, maybe some old culture, but where is the proof? And it's really interesting because we take the, you know, rules very seriously. You know, nobody will just drive through the red light unless it's, you know, a drunk person. But when it comes to the spiritual topics, people start to kind of like put their own interpretations to say. And we can see, for example, one person, you know, for the devotee, when we hear Krishna lifted Govardhan Hill and he kept it on his little pinky, devotee, he thinks, wow, this is wonderful. But for a materialistic person, they will say, why would God do that? And, you know, on top of that, he was also playing the flute. You know, for a materialistic person, it's kind of inconceivable. Like, why would such things take place? So we can see there is a difference. One person will perceive knowledge in one way, and the other person will perceive knowledge in a totally different way. And now, if we ask ourselves, do we always act based on our knowledge? What would you say? No. Isn't that funny? Like, you know, something is good for you. Like, you know, maybe certain kind of diet or exercise. But do we do it? Quite often not. Some of you do, I know. So what would you say is the most influencing factor in our lives? Why do we do things the way we do, even despite having information, even despite having certain knowledge? Our mind manipulates us. That's a very good answer. Thank you. Anybody else?
We seek pleasure.
Quick, instant gratification. We don't want to wait. Anybody else? Have you ever found yourself thinking like, I know better, but I still did this. And you know, now I feel, you know, stupid. And something in us basically influences us to act contrary to what we know. So it is actually scientifically also proven in different studies that actually we are creatures of habit. We develop habits by association with other people, by association with different activities that we perform. So we create certain habits in our life that are pretty much kind of like hardwiring in our subconsciousness that pretty much force, I would say, majority of our daily activities. So to change that, what do you think would be the crucial ingredient in our life? Yes, Prabhuji.
Changing association.
Okay, so what did you say the first thing was? Change in association. Thank you. Excellent. Excellent answer. So the association is the really key. Association is the key. Basically, in good association, we will develop good habits. In bad association, we will develop bad habits. And if you look at this little book, if I drop it like this, it will naturally go where? Down. So, what do you think happens to our consciousness if we don't cultivate it? Does it go up or down? It goes down. Why? Because of the three moods of nature. Basically, we are naturally gravitating towards the tamagun, towards the rajas. However, it takes effort to actually uplift our consciousness to the sattvagun. So, in the previous chapter, we find a very beautiful purport. Srila Prabhupada is actually speaking. There is a last verse of the second chapter in the first canto. And it's described that Lord Krishna appears in different incarnations at different times to reclaim the living entities back home, back to his own abode. And Srila Prabhupada writes a beautiful purport, and he is saying that there is no happiness in material world. in any corner of the universe, there is really no real happiness for which the living entity is seeking for. And Prabhupada is saying, therefore, Lord comes to this material world and performs his pastimes just to create desire in the conditioned souls to go back home to Godhead. So, and therefore he gives the knowledge in Bhagavad Gita. We find instructions given to Arjuna, in other revealed scriptures we find information that are basically like a guidebook for us, how to live, how to improve our consciousness, and eventually return back to Godhead. And there is a beautiful and famous verse, we often find it quoted from the Shvetashvara Upanishad, which says, only unto one who has unflinching devotion to the Lord and to the spiritual master does transcendental knowledge become automatically revealed. Very, very important verse. So I wanted to share with you one beautiful example which kind of really clearly describes how basically there were students in, you know, they were studying together about the same age, like most of you. But some of them became, you know, very, very famous devotees to the Lord, which is five Pandavas. But the others did not. And the particular personality I will be talking about, his name is Ashwatthama. You probably heard his name, famous character from the Mahabharata. So, who is Ashwatthama? He was son of Dronacharya, famous, powerful Brahmin who was teaching the Pandavas. He was the teacher in the royal assembly of the Kuru dynasty. And basically he had a son, his name was Ashwatthama, and he was trained along with all other prince at that time, with Arjuna, Bhim, Yudhishthir, Sahadev, Duryodhana and his brothers. And being Dronacharya's son, he actually was very much favored by Dronacharya. And there was a few stories where basically Dronacharya understood Arjuna is the best of his students, but because of the love for his son, you know, he was basically trying to, you know, keep up with Arjuna and teach his son, you know, the same kind of like weapon tricks that he was teaching Arjuna. But Arjuna was always faster and always more swift in all the lessons. Anyhow, as we know the story, basically after the war broke and all the, you know, family members separated to two different sides, Ashwatthama was fighting for the Duryodhana and his brothers along with his father Dronacharya. And after several days of the battle, we know that Dronacharya he was killed by the trick. In other words, he was so powerful, there was no way to defeat him. So at one point, we know Krishna asked Yudhishthir to proclaim that Ashwatthama is dead, because that would be the only reason why Dronacharya would stop fighting. Otherwise, there was no way to defeat him. And Yudhishthir just couldn't say that, because it would be, you know, tricky, a lie. But Bhima, he happened to kill an elephant called Ashwatthama. And somehow it happened basically that finally Yudhishthir said it, and at the same time basically the conch blew, so Dronacharya could not hear the word elephant, but he only heard Ashwatthama was killed, and he assumed it was his son. Anyhow, he at that point dropped his weapons and he was killed. So after a while, basically all the Kuru dynasty was finished, and there was only three warriors. We know that even Duryodhana himself was really badly hurt by Bhima's club. And as he was lying on the battlefield, there was only three warriors left. Can you imagine, out of millions and millions of warriors, now there's only three left on the Duryodhana's side. And they were Ashwatthama, Kripacharya, and Kritavarma. So they go to see their commander-in-chief, which is Duryodhana, and they see him in that painful condition. And they're heartbroken to see their king in such a sorrowful condition. So Ashwatthama, he kind of takes a vow, I will kill the Pandavas just to please you, my king. Duryodhana, he's thinking like, I mean, nobody was capable of doing that, but if you can do it, I will name you the chief in charge of all of my, you know, kingdom. And he performed even a ceremony making Ashwatthama the chief in charge. So that evening, basically, as they were kind of like resting, Ashwatthama, he was thinking like, how am I going to do this? And he realized, you know, Pandavas are not just, you know, ordinary warriors. Nobody could defeat them. I mean, even Bhishmadeva was, you know, not able to defeat them. But all of a sudden, he saw big oval coming from the darkness and attacking little birds who were sleeping on a tree branch. And the oval just, you know, was really large bird, like, you know, killed the sleeping birds, like, with no problems. And he got his idea in his mind, I'm going to go in the midst of the night and attack the Pandavas, even though it was against the religious code of fighting. So he wakes up his companions, and they were all thinking, how could you do that? This is, you know, against any religious principles, you know. No warrior should be attacked during sleep, you know, no warrior should be attacked without weapon or chariot. So, you know, back then, you know, people are much, much more respectful and following very strict rules in the warfare. So, but he still was kind of like totally influenced by the revenge. And there was no way of persuading him other way. So he goes to the camp where the Pandavas were located, and he attacks all the soldiers who were deep in sleep. And as we know from Mahabharata, he did really, really evil act of killing the sleeping warriors. But the biggest mistake Ashwatthama did, thinking that they were Pandavas, he actually killed five sons of Draupadi, which he assumed they were Pandavas, but he didn't realize in the midst of dark. So the next day, when even Duryodhana, he was very displeased to hear that, because he, even though he was enemy with Pandavas, he really didn't want Kuru race to totally be finished. So even he was totally displeased by the action of Ashwatthama. Now you may kind of, you know, wonder like, where I'm going with this story. But you can see how one act kind of leads into the other. First, Ashwatthama was very envious. He was very envious especially to Arjuna, because he was more qualified. But then, beside that, he was also having bad association. He was in company of Duryodhana, and he kind of developed bad qualities, even though he was son of Brahmin, very learned Brahmana. So that's why I'm kind of taking him as this for this particular example. Anyhow, the story goes on. There's quite a lot to say about it. But eventually Arjuna captures him, and he was brought in front of Draupadi, and Krishna was present there, and all the Pandavas. And there was discussion. There was discussion what to do with him. So can you imagine, after everything that happened, after all the evil things that he did, what would you do with him if you were in position of Arjuna to chastise him? What would you do? Anyway, I'll let you kind of think in your own mind. But it was a very tricky situation. Krishna was saying he should be punished. Bhima was saying he should be killed right away. But Draupadi, she was saying, no, no, he's son of our teacher. And besides that, his mother, basically she did not follow her husband in the funeral fire. So she's still alive because of her son. And I don't want another mother to suffer just like I'm suffering now. So Draupadi had totally different feeling in her heart. And Yudhishthira was on this side with Draupadi. So in that particular situation, it's there's a beautiful verse actually in the first canto. You can read that particular chapter. So there was the, you know, very, very, you know, kind of like, it's just picture in your mind, it's very emotional situation. Five sons of the Pandavas were killed. And not only them, but actually many other soldiers. So everybody is, you know, in very tense mood, and they were trying to decide what to do with this, you know, rascal Ashwatthama. And there was a beautiful verse saying, and addressing Krishna as Chaturbhuj. Chaturbhuj means one with the four hands. And it's interesting because throughout, you know, all the pastimes in this, you know, this particular incarnation, Krishna, of course, he is in his two-hand form. But in that particular instance, he is described as a four-hand. And the reason why, because he was separating Bhima and Draupadi, you know, they were kind of arguing. One wants to kill Ashwatthama, the other one wants to save him. So Krishna manifests the two extra hands to kind of keep them at peace. So anyhow, I just kind of wanted to briefly tell that story to kind of point out how bad association can affect anybody, regardless who we are, even if we're coming from very learned background, bad association can really affect our consciousness and create bad habits in us. I know we are running out of time, but briefly wanted to also read a couple of verses from Chaitanya Charitamrita. As we know, we are coming to the very, very special time of the year where appearance of Lord Nityananda is coming and appearance of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. A very wonderful time for a devotee to actually meditate on these two lords. So I was recently with a group of devotees and we were discussing how Lord Nityananda and Lord Chaitanya, they appeared as a moon and sun. And it's described in Chaitanya Charitamrita, just as the sun and moon, they travel towards the west. There's a description how Lord Chaitanya's movement actually will come to the west, and Prabhupada did fulfill that prophecy. But one interesting thing I found in Adi Lila, there is a beautiful verse and Prabhupada comments on it saying, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Nityananda Prabhu drive away the five kinds of ignorance of the conditioned souls. In the Mahabharata, these five kinds of ignorance are described. They are accepting the body to be the self, making material sense gratification one standard of enjoyment, being anxious due to the material identification, lamenting, and thinking there is anything beyond the absolute truth. The teachings of Lord Chaitanya eradicate these five kinds of ignorance. Whatever one sees or otherwise experiences, one should know to be simply an exhibition of the Supreme Personality of Goddess energy. Everything is manifestation of Krishna. I'll stop here. Thank you so much for your kind attention. If anybody would like to say anything or comment or any questions, feel free to do so.
Shesha Prabhu.
Can you mention those five kinds of ignorance again you just mentioned?
How they differentiate?
Just the five kinds, what kind of five kinds of ignorance?
So five types of ignorance, basically, the first one being accepting the body as the self. So we can see that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, basically, out of his causeless mercy, he started the Sankirtan movement to give a chance to the living soul to get purified by chanting his holy name. Accepting the body as the self is the prime reason for all the suffering that conditioned soul experiences in this world. And then the second was listed as making material sense gratification one's standard of enjoyment. We can see that that is also he pointed as a big aspect of the ignorance. When we primarily focus on sense gratification and we put that as our standard of happiness. And then the third one, being anxious due to the material identification. So, as we can see, people in this world are very much in an anxiety. And naturally, because, you know, when we are attached to something temporary, something that will eventually perish, you know, in due course of time, then naturally an anxiety comes with that. And the fourth one, lamentation. We are all familiar with that. Who said that? I think Bhaktivinoda Thakur said how old people lament about the past, young people dream about the future, but nobody's in the present, actually. And the fifth, thinking there is anything beyond the absolute truth. So these are the five kinds of ignorance which Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda, basically, they are relieving conditioned soul from these five kinds of ignorance. One of the verses kind of leading into this one was through the actions, it says here, but those two brothers dissipate the darkness of the inner court of the heart, and thus they help one meet the two kinds of Bhagavatas. One of the Bhagavatas is the great scripture Srimad Bhagavatam, and the other is the pure devotee absorbed in the mellows of loving devotion. Through the actions of those two Bhagavatas, the Lord instills the mellows of transcendental loving service into the heart of living beings, and thus the Lord in the heart of his devotee comes under the control of the devotee's love. Thank you so much. Yeah, Dharmaraj Prabhu.
You were talking about taking association, that association can bring you down. So I was thinking of the training we are getting in Krishna consciousness to become good association and make ourselves so strong. So I was thinking of the example of Prahlad Maharaj, that he was alone among, I don't know how many of his classmates, and the entire kingdom of Hiranyakashipu was that association. But instead of him taking association, he was giving association. So there is a fine line, and sometimes it's hard for us to figure out whether we're giving or taking. And one thought that came to my mind to differentiate between the two is, what is our standard of Krishna consciousness? Mm-hmm. I'm not saying that we should willfully go into bad association and thinking, well, you know, we're strong enough to give. But on the flip side is that we should learn to, you know, make ourselves good association and strong associations. So, and if you can comment on that.
Yeah, that is a very important thing that basically for majority devotees, we need both. We need to take good association, and also we have to make ourselves available to those who need our association. And basically the process itself is kind of like requiring both to be simultaneously present. In the case of Prahlad Maharaj, that is example of Mahabhagavat. Basically, even though he was alone, he was not influenced by the bad association. Rather, he was capable of influencing everybody around him. But in our case, we have to simultaneously take good association and at the same time be kind and compassionate to those who are less advanced than us. And the more we do those things, the more we will actually qualify to become actually good mentors to others. So, I'm not sure if I can say much more than that. Yeah, thank you. Thank you so much. Anybody else would like to comment? If not, we will stop here. Thank you so much. Garantara Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.